And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Plus, minus.
Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot!
Tim Kawakami deserves all the credit.
Plus, minus.
That is a word right there.
I didn't hear what you said. What'd you say?
Fluffle.
Plus, minus.
Yeah, like you, Marcus Thompson.
Marcus always tell the truth. Plus, minus.
The only thing that I would say to Ethan Strauss is that he's a pretty damn good reporter. He's well
plus
respected.
Minus. I think he got the highest plus minus in the season in NBA history.
Welcome back to Warriors Plus Minus. Did we take a week off or was that just me? It doesn't matter.
That was you.
We are back. We got the whole gang with us. Listen, y'all, they are trying to kick us off. They are trying to shut down our show, but we are the resistance, and we refuse. We are not signing off for months at a time. We will be here. We're a 50-week show. We get a couple weeks for a break, and that's it. Right, Tim Kawakami, the boss?
We are insisting on it. We are demanding that we do this show.
Y'all no can't shut time. Us up.
Except for next week. Then we'll
I still have to go after Marcus for this idea that because he wasn't here last week, we weren't here last week. I mean, do you just think when you're not at the grocery store, nobody's there? What is this?
You know what I'm saying? You feel me?
You didn't listen to the podcast? I figured you would
take notes. Like, there's really fine points everyone was making there. Let's amplify a few. And I do want to thank the other people on the show for pausing a bit while I rebooked my other show at the start of this show. So. That was fun.
Making us late. Actually, wasn't I doing something last week? I think I was.
I think I was covering the A's last week.
I think I was. Game two of the near meltdown. Yeah, I think I was. It was all bad. They lost game one, so I had to like focus, dive in. But now I'm back. And look, I may not have listened to the episode, but Slater, I did read your training camp finale, I would say. But I figure we probably shouldn't talk about that and just let TK talk to Steve about that since he flexed on us and delayed the show.
Hey. We don't reveal future guests.
I guess we do on Warriors Plus Minus.
It could be any Steve. You got Steve Nash, Steve Garvey,
Steve Nash would be interesting to talk to right now after Kyrie KD podcast.
Welcome to life as the Brooklyn Nets coach.
Do you feel like you're the coach of the team you're the coach of?
It is really interesting, though, how, and, you know, obviously they went to five straight finals and won three titles, but it's interesting how just about everything that happens in this league somehow has a connection to the Warriors. And it's always just like, it's like, man, they really were like the heartbeat of the league for a while. As you start looking at, like, even with that Nets situation, that's three dudes who are historically intertwined with the Warriors. And it's just like, at every level, you start thinking about it. Maybe the Miami Heat might be the only team that has their own kind of ecosystem.
And they've got Andre Iguodala on.
The Lakers, the Warriors, Kevin Bacon? They must be, huh?
Every successful dynasty.
Yes. Absolutely, Slater.
How about like Greg Popovich's coaching tree? I mean, that's a famous thing. You know, like that spreads all across the league because he's had success, and success leads to people going elsewhere and getting important jobs and becoming important people across the league. Yes, you're right. The Orlando Magic, they aren't just sprouting their people all across the league. That's just natural in business, right?
Just the thought of that was kind of funny. Why not? Aren't they Orlando Magic?
It's also coming from a paradigm of like somebody who grew up here and remember this team as so terrible for so long. It's still kind of jarring that the Warriors got to be the Warriors. It's still a little bit like, yo, that really did happen in hindsight. And now, like, you're seeing the impact spread league-wide. I'm sorry, I just opened up the door for Ethan to talk ratings again, my bad.
Hey, people love the Warriors, man. I mean, it's proof positive, and it's weird. You want to talk about jarring, it's weird to me to think, man, the Golden State Warriors might be a bigger draw than the Los Angeles Lakers. You know, that's an open question. And there are a lot of confounding
variables. Slater's going to have to debate that one.
I told you.
Yeah. I guess.
How so, Ethan?
Well, I'm just saying if we're doing a comparison.
Oh, he's going to go with ratings.
Well, yeah, it's ratings. I mean, that's what it is. And I don't like saying ratings. I like saying viewership because ratings sounds like this abstract number. We're talking about fans. We're talking about butts on couches, if you will. And just the idea that the Warriors Conference Finals was more watched so far than the current NBA Finals, with all the caveats and the confounding variables that one might offer and one might mention, just that alone, the idea of a Warriors Conference Finals getting more viewership, and the last Warriors Conference Finals getting more viewership than Lakers in the Finals, I mean, it makes you raise your eyebrows. And yes, I do think the Warriors would be doing better and getting more viewership than these Lakers. There's something about it that's weird. You know, beyond everything else, there's just something about it's so strange, the LeBron-Laker thing. It has worked gloriously. He has walked into yet another situation and through just force of will and his own excellence, created a finals favorite yet again, third time. And yet, something about it just doesn't resonate. It's just kind of strange. It's like he went to Miami, he's a villain. He goes to Cleveland, he's a hero. He's on the Lakers, and it's okay. I don't know.
Slater, you just gonna let him talk about your team like that?
Yeah, I know. Come on now. I just like,
First of all, I don't have a team. Unless we're talking about
OK State, baby. OK State,
undefeated, 10th ranked Oklahoma State Cowboys. By the way, we're rolling.
I'll give you the Indians. Don't be trying to disown the Indians.
Hey, already. Come on. I wanted to disown them after that performance. Anyway, I think that we are too much talk about the Warriors in the past tense when, like, who knows what the Warriors ratings will be next year and into the future. That was an era. That was a time. Yes, Steph Curry still will be on the team, but you need, like, the growth pattern of a team. I think that matters a lot. And the Warriors will still have that because they have the big names. To me, like, there's just so much going on in the world. You mentioned the confounding variables. We can't really just kind of skip over that. Like, this is just a different world we're living in right now than the Warriors ever operated in. So I don't know what all these numbers mean, to be honest, because it's just, I don't know what anything means right now.
Yeah, if the Warriors were in the finals right now, the numbers might be very similar. It's really hard to tell.
I don't think so. I'm pushing back on that. I think we have plenty of run-up in the pre-pandemic to show that this Lakers-LeBron situation is nowhere near the pull, nowhere near the resonance of what the Warriors had going.
What the Warriors had going was when the Warriors had it going. They don't, you know, you're not going to have that forever. Things rise and they fall. And
so we're talking about the distinction between Warriors as a brand, Lakers as a brand, and the specific this Warriors, Steph Curry Warriors, is what we're talking about.
We're judging the Lakers now in a pandemic versus the Warriors at their apex with Steph Curry and Kevin Durant. And I think that's hard to do. I just don't think you can do that. The Warriors with Steph Curry and Kevin Durant right now would be getting very good ratings. That doesn't exist. And, you know, you could just say that, hey, the Larry Bird, Kevin McHale, Robert Parrish Celtics would be great. Well, that doesn't exist right now.
The Shaq Kobe Lakers.
Yeah, you have to view everything in its own context. And that Warriors team was huge and does not exist. Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar would be getting great numbers right now, but that doesn't exist. What exists is
they're not walking through that door.
Even still, we got to at least hold out the possibility that even if they did exist, maybe people don't care in a pandemic. Like you could put anybody in the same situation, and people, if the pandemic has turned off people
in
to
a bubble,
viewership,
no fans.
Yeah, like it,
September
it may not matter.
Finals.
I think that has
September
an impact.
September finals.
But am I the only one on a Warriors podcast to give the Warriors some love? I mean, am I the only one?
Dude, I started with the Warriors love. What do you mean?
Yeah, but then you're arguing against yourself.
Those five seasons were an epic moment in time, not just in the Bay Area, in the sports universe. I think that's why we started this podcast, Marcus and I. I'll put it that way. I mean, we knew it at the time. And I think that's certainly true. I'm not going to argue against that. And it still could be continuing. You know, the tentacles of that operation, we see it with Durant in Brooklyn, and we see with Nash's connection to the Warriors, and we see with Iguodala, the Heat. We just see all these things that are happening. At the time, we said it was comparable to the Showtime Lakers. We said at the time it was comparable to the Jordan Bulls. You know, maybe not quite as big as the Jordan Bulls, but in that conversation. It's not happening now, though. And I think what we're saying is we just can't just chop it out and say, okay, let's compare them to this time. You know, everything is in its own era. Everything is its own context. But yes, the Warriors for that five-season run was as big as we're ever going to see again. I would agree with that.
including within the Warriors. Like, with this year was a great lesson. Like, Steph Curry breaks his hand. Like, didn't the viewership get cut, like, even locally, like 60% or something? I mean,
to quote Mark Jackson, they let go of the rope. It was it's a special place in time, but I think if, let's say, hypothetically, they opened up the bubble to every team because they said we can't make a determination on who's out, who's in, and the Warriors made a run to that finals, I think it would be capturing a lot of attention, even with all the confounding variables. I maintain that there's just something about LeBron Lakers that's just not really... Something about it. It just feels a little too prefabricated.
It's still Kobe. And there's a reason for that. I mean, one, the Kobe iconography is so strong, understandably, logically, it's true, it's authentic. But also, the LeBron iconography isn't as strong in LA. It just isn't there. And that's why you still hear Kobe. That's why Anthony Davis makes that three-pointer and shouts about, Mamba or whatever he shouted. It's still Kobe. That's still a Kobe franchise, and it's humongous because of it, but it's not the LeBron franchise. And then that might just be specific to that franchise at this moment. I agree. It's different. It's not as big as you thought it would be. LeBron and the Lakers, I thought, was going to be an immense deal, and it isn't. It hasn't happened that way. Maybe because last year was so bad. I don't know. There's probably a lot of factors with this.
We used to have this discussion really in the post Kevin Durant coming to the Warriors, but like the player movement era and the inability of like seeing a team grow. That's what the Warriors always had, is like you had what the Nuggets kind of have right now, which is like the start of a growth pattern. And fans, and even casual, like not specific Lakers fans, but NBA fans as a whole, seem to appreciate a team that has had an arc. And the Lakers didn't necessarily have an arc. A lot of these teams didn't. The Clippers certainly didn't. And it's just there's less like investment in seeing a team break through when it's like they're not necessarily breaking through something that they've been like. It's like watching a movie. You're just dropping in right at the last 20 minutes when Bruce Willis is fighting something. It's like, oh, we didn't get the exposition, I guess you would call it. I think there's a lot of that. Like, the Lakers don't feel like some organically grown team.
They don't, and in a way, it's unfair.
I mean, the Heat were popular with the non.
They still had Dwayne Wade. They still had Dwayne Wade, though. Yeah.
They were villains. I mean, what sells the game is contrast. That's what it's all about. Epic contrast. It's not as simple as we've got two big markets, so we're going to do numbers. Sometimes it's about the playing up of big versus little. I mean, the most watched conference finals in recent memory is Lakers Kings, because it was the big, bad, glitzy Lakers against the podunk, scrappy Kings, and people get drawn into that kind of thing. You've got Duke versus UNC. Those are contrasting colleges with contrasting reputations. So I think that with LeBron in Miami, he had kind of these are the big bad villains that really helped sell the game for a while, and people were really into that. And then he goes to Cleveland and he's hometown hero, and there's just something about the story that just doesn't quite make sense. And in a way, it's unfair to the Lakers because they've had a hell of a season. Their veterans do a great job. They play like they give a shit in a manner that's more palpable than what the Clippers were doing. Can we go into the numbers? Is that allowed? I feel like, is it okay to talk about the numbers? People get very sensitive about these things, but...
Well, they're just... I mean, I don't know. It's simple. They're way down. They're down. They're just down for many reasons.
But I want to make a point, because I think people are trying to cope and they're trying to come up with excuses. And there are excuses and there are caveats, but this should be known. The argument I'm often hearing is that things are down for everybody, which A, is not true. I mean, things are down for a lot, but not for everybody. Not in every sport.
Oh, by the way, I'll just say on the quick aside, I mean, and you properly always use the NFL as not losing a lot of ratings, and they are losing less than everyone else. But I just talked to an NFL executive walking out of a stadium Sunday who happened to say, man, our numbers are not good. Like, literally was saying that. So it's less percentage loss with the NFL, but they're feeling it too. They are feeling it too.
Everybody's feeling the effects of the sports pileup right now. I think everybody's feeling it. But I would point to the NFL. I'd point to that Sunday night game, because not the greatest Sunday night game, I think we would say. A lot of injuries. Even if you're a Niners fan, you could admit as much. It gets over 15 million people going head-to-head with the NBA, which gets 5.9 million. So the NFL, Sunday Night NFL, nearly triples up the NBA viewership right there. And what's interesting about that is that a Sunday Night football game and your standard NBA Finals game typically gets roughly the same amount of viewership, when they're going head to head in this situation, the NBA is getting nearly tripled up. I think that's an indication that the NBA is losing more in this scenario.
But when
relatively.
Would the NBA finals ever have gone against the NFL before?
Well, they haven't. And what I'm saying is that you would almost expect it to be more even, you know, typically.
It's the NFL, man. It's the NFL. It is bigger. You're right. Yeah, it's just bigger. No.
I have friends who are interested in both leagues, but they're more interested in the NFL. They would watch both, but I know if they have a choice which one they're watching. And that's just the reality of most people, I think, in the sporting public.
But here's a question. If the Warriors' disappearance is a cause of this, which I think we all agree it is, if they're pretty good, I mean, we're not going to be great next season. Let's just take that off. Let's just say if they're pretty good, if they're a 48-50 win team next season, Steph Curry's healthy and playing well, whatever with Klay and Draymond, whatever. Are they the number one team in the league? Are they the team that everyone has to watch?
I think Lakers off a title against Warriors would be a very good Western Conference rivalry. Like, I don't know what the, are we talking like local viewers on a game-to-game basis? I think
about national viewership, biggest draw. We're talking biggest draw.
Yeah, we're talking like when the Warriors play, not necessarily. Okay, the Warriors play the Celtics, the Lakers play the Celtics. Which one is the Saturday night featured game?
I have a question for you. Is Steph Curry in the MVP conversation? I think that's what matters.
Yeah, top five. If he's like, yeah, he's Steph Curry. Yeah, he picks up about where he was. Let's just put it that way, about.
Then yes, if they're dull, if they're a four seed, if Steph's having an okay year and they're like kind of floating through the regular season and load managing and all that, no. But like if they're a comeback story, if they are a 65 win comeback story, they yes, they gain a bunch of momentum.
65 wins?
Yeah, jeez. Yeah, also, if
they won 67 in their original, you know, Steph Curry like MVP season, right?
When they win three years together.
Look, it's 3 years together.
Look. I'm not predicting that's going to happen, number one. Number two, what's the season's going to start in March? How many games is it going to be? Will there be fans? I mean, there's a lot of questions here. Come on.
I'm hoping the rapid testing helps.
What will the rosters be? Like, you know, we never know what team will be built or fall apart, Clippers, right? Like, who knows?
We don't know.
Maybe Paul George is on the on the Lakers.
We don't know who's going to be on the Warriors. So all that's in play.
I like Anthony's construction of this. If Steph can get back to a top five MVP candidate, the Warriors are the biggest draw in the league. And I'm not even sure it's close. Just based on what we've seen from the way the Lakers are not resonating at Laker levels. I think that's really what it is. And the Warriors are kind of, hey, we're a Warrior-centric podcast. Accuse us of being biased, but they are the missing ingredient right now in the NBA.
Well, Warriors-Nets is going to be a pretty good game. I'll put it two pretty good games. There's no question about that.
That might if be the NBA could get Warriors-Lakers, huh? Warriors.
Yeah, Christmas Day. Like Christmas Day and Kevin Durant and Kyrie are having an argument that everybody's talking about, and it's on the court, and there's, Christmas Day Nets-Warriors,
We should report it, though, according to Draymond.
Hey, can I tell you guys something? There's not going to be a Christmas game. No. The season's not going to start till after Christmas.
He's literally canceling Christmas on
Voice
us.
Of Doom.
Is there no Santa Claus? Later.
Wow.
I mean, that's the other thing. Like, the world just also needs to get back to normal, I think, for the NBA. Also, beyond the ratings, what would give me optimism if I was like kind of wide scoping and viewing about the NBA, they are proving to be just a very sharp organization from like the ground level and the way they've constructed the bubble and the way it's worked and the product that they put on the floor and the partnership between players union and league. Like, to me, in the long term, I trust the core of the league to like stay strong, to get back on its feet when they get all their stars back. I think when we're sitting here in 2025, I am confident it will be a healthy league.
Interesting. Well, it's not going to be healthy, and this is not discussed. I'm going to talk about something that nobody talks about in media.
Get ready for the bleeps.
Oh, baby.
Yeah, here we go.
Here's who's going to get it in the neck from the NBA losing viewership and the impact it's going to have on the sports world. It's not going to be necessarily the NBA. They're not going to make as much money as they want to, but they will make more money in the next TV deal because that's just how the market is. So they're going to make more money than last time, not as much as they could have. The people are going to get it in the neck are ESPN. That's where the shortfalls are going to happen. That's where you're going to start seeing layoffs. I mean, typically, according to my sources, I guess I should say.
Let's not go too far on that one. Yeah, we're
you think this is an interesting column if I start talking about what the average finals game makes for ESPN versus?
We don't work for ESPN. Why are we talking about ESPN?
Well, because there's a massive, because if ESPN ends up laying off hundreds of people after the NBA finals.
let's not get that aggregated. Let's just let's talk about the Warriors and the NBA.
I'm not laughing glibly at that outcome, by the way. I want to say it's a very unfortunate outcome.
Slater, let's bring it back to hoop. You talked about in your piece, which is something that's been an issue for a while, the lack of athleticism. It's why guys like JaVale McGee always was able to find a spot. Was that a tip on the draft? Does that rule out maybe a couple of, you know, not that great athletes and put the Warriors in position to say, hey, we really got to ratchet up the athleticism on this team?
You know, the draft is not the only way to inject this roster with athleticism. There are a lot of tools. There's obviously the trade exception.
But if you're light, you probably need two or three. Two or three players.
No, I agree. Mid-level, you know, you can do it different ways. I just think there is a, you know, you get that team in the room, which they just did the last 2 weeks, and you kind of start to feel, I mean, you felt it last year too. How small and unathletic were they, you know, last year?
It's a perennial problem, I think.
Well, it also happens with older teams, right? I mean, you know, older players.
I mostly just wanted you to say that rules out Killian Hayes. That's all.
No!
They don't take Killian Hayes. Ethan's got 15 columns over the next 3 years saying why they should have taken Killian Hayes.
My media takes are cut off. Killian Hayes out of the mix. Killing me these last few minutes.
I think that is a great way to look at this minicamp, and I really like that Slater did it that way. It's like they wanted to feel who they were. They didn't have Steph and Draymond there, but they wanted to feel who they were. And if you just go through it logically, you see how, you know, they're pretty small at center right now. They don't have explosive talent on the wing except for Wiggins. The players they've got, Pascal, Poole, you know, they're players, but they're not dynamic, athletic, you know, lengthy. Yeah, they both got length, but they're not Livingston kind of players. They're not Iguodala kind of players.
They're not rim protectors. They're not versatile all guard three positions.
Yeah, certainly not Durant kind of players. Those are great players. They're hard to get. You get them and you're really good. But I think if you think about that and they're just kind of looking around and they're playing 5-on-5 and they're seeing who they got, then they're an older roster, and Steph and Draymond certainly don't really add to the dynamicism at this point in their careers. Yeah, I could see them going, geez, we could use some bouncy, some 6'8" bouncy guys, which they don't really have. And can they do that in the offseason? You can with a number 2 overall pick. And I would still think that points heavily to James Wiseman. He's 7'1" bouncy guy, but man, he'd give them something else.
That answers your rim protection, your center issue, which is an issue. That doesn't necessarily answer the wing issue. And you could, you know, you could get a Devin Vassell or something like that, you know. But, you know,
Jonathan
even
Simmons.
In free agency. Well, that was the interesting part of camp, because I'm not sure Jonathan Simmons is an answer, but it reveals there's an athlete in camp, and he's a D-leaguer, and he's like one of the best, you know, athletes we have on the wing right now in camp. They have smarts. The Draymonds, the Stephs, the Clays, they have skill with Steph and Clay. What this roster has lost, which is Iguodala, Livingston, Durant, is just, and really their centers, their past centers, is thump, strength, rim protection, length, versatility. And that, to me, is where they need to point almost all of their tools.
I'm sorry, I was told by somebody in an organization that Andrew Wiggins provided all of that.
Honestly, Wiggins is now their best athlete. And it's good that they got him instead of D'Angelo Russell, because imagine if you flip that and now we're sitting there, so Russell on this roster instead of Wiggins.
You're saying D'Angelo Russell's not an athlete? Is that what you're saying? You saying slow-mo?
But the problem is Andrew Wiggins certainly doesn't make up for a Durant, Iguodala, Livingston loss. You know what I mean? Like, you need more than just a Wiggins. Wiggins does help in this category, but the problem is if Wiggins is your like lone high athlete wing, and he doesn't really use that athleticism that well, particularly on defense, although we'll see if he eventually does. But yeah, they need help in that category.
I do think he helps in that category, though. I do think Wiggins, just his ability to finish.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS. You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Let's just say, if it isn't Wiseman, is there someone at two who would fit that?
La,
I mean, LaMelo Ball, but he's not defensive.
Anthony Edwards is he's a bulky, bigger, like, you know, I mean, he's not your, he's your strong, traditional, yeah. Like, yeah, yeah, Leaper, he's strong, yeah, but, you know, I think
very bad at defense,
there.
It would,
I can
it would
say. He's like. Versatile at defense because in that he can't guard any
an
position.
Athlete.
Okoro would be my, and that's what I've said, he's my guy. He's my
Vassal.
Guy.
I like that.
I would not take either one of them at two, obviously. No
Okoro
way.
Okoro gets the Andre comps, which, I mean, who knows? But I don't know how you feel about that, because if a player turns into Andre Iguodala, that's fantastic. But you wonder about a player getting compared to a guy who's not a superstar coming out, if that's really a great sign. Maybe I'm not articulating that right.
Well, that's not what Andre Iguodala was supposed to be coming out, right? You draft for the top end, and then you see what you get with it. Andre was supposed to be like this superstar wing scorer.
Yeah, he was supposed to be the next Iverson. He's supposed to replace Iverson in Philly.
And there was always been disappointment with him because he wasn't that kind of player. Turns out he's a great, great player in another way. But that's like, yeah, I always thought that about some like baseball acquisitions. If you're trying to acquire guys to be decent and they fail, you've got a horrible player. If you try to sign people who could be great and they're just good, you work out pretty well. And I think some of that is with the draft. Jerry West always,
you know, shoot
you don't
for
always,
the stars, land on the moon philosophy.
Shoot for the moon, and even if you miss, you'll land amongst the stars.
Wow. Was that Ethan Strauss poetry?
And if you don't shoot for the moon, then you wind up with Jacob Evans.
Wow. But I mean, I just say you go for star quality. You don't go for complementary quality if you can. And then if you go for a star and he turns into a complementary player, that's okay. Versus what the other downside of the complementary player would be. That's my point there. And at
especially
two,
at
I don't,
two.
Yeah, at two, I don't draft complementary. I do not draft complementary players.
Well, I want to ask you guys, because there's something else going on. Not only, obviously, did the Warriors have a camp, and they're starting to kind of get a look of how they're built, what they might need this summer, but also, you know, atop their conference, the Lakers have now formed into the team to beat next season even. You know, it's not like the Lakers are going to break up. Yes, they have a tiny window, but it includes next season. And that is an incredibly large team, a strong team. There's the argument that is like, hey, don't build yourself comparing, you know, you get caught in, what was it, the middle of the last decade or early last decade when like the Thunder got Kendrick Perkins because they thought they were going to face Andrew Bynum. Andrew Bynum's gone, and then suddenly they don't need Kendrick Perkins, and it was like a bad mistake. But like matchups in the playoffs dictate a lot of times who's going to move on. And if the Warriors believe that they're going to see the Lakers next, you know, West Finals, second round, whenever, I think they're going to need some injection of some Thunder too. And I don't mean Thunder as a team.
Wow.
I mean injection
bring
of like
Kendrick Perkins. For
yeah. Oh my.
Well, here's the okay, Anthony. Since you've been doing these studies of the Lakers and they've been really good and been doing very well, I should point out also. Is there something about them you think you've learned? I mean, is there something different, some aspect of them you think that it takes someone who really watched them closely to figure out?
They have versatility within their lineups where they can really try to beat you up on the glass. And it's Howard and it's Davis in the front court with a 6'9" point guard, LeBron. And they're, oh my gosh, what a big lineup. Or even, you know, JaVale adds some length to that. But then it's like, eh, we're too big right now. Let's get Dwight out of there. Let's get JaVale out of there. And then suddenly it's like, well, this is a small ball lineup, but still enormous. It's Anthony Davis at center. It's LeBron still at point guard. It's Kuzma, who's 6'8". It's Markieff Morris, who's 6'9". He's not that great of a defender, but he can be a stretch four. And it's like, yeah, you know what? They can play small ball against you and still be mobile, and they're still enormous. It's what Durant did for the Warriors, right? It was like, well, the Warriors are playing small, but they still have a 7-footer that's blocking 2 shots a game and shooting from three. And I'm not saying the Warriors can get Durant. What happened in the second round of the Rockets? It was just the Rockets at some point in the middle of that series went, we're just too small. We're not there.
Oh, by the way, that was an incredible game by Jimmy Butler. No question. I didn't watch all of it, but I mean, no question. And people said, man, has LeBron ever been on the floor in the finals, been outplayed on both sides of the floor just like that? It's never happened. It's never happened. We saw it happen a lot. About nine games of it, we saw it happen. Kevin Durant was better than LeBron for 9 games. Not every game. And not every game was like what Butler did.
But definitely the big ones.
And nobody wants to give him credit because he wants it so badly.
Hey, I'm giving him credit. I'm the Durant credit guy. That's me. That's me.
No, I know. But the broader conversation, the people he wants, the Stephen A. Smiths of the world, the guys on TV, it just didn't happen, which I think was an issue. And there was just no extent to which he could play better than LeBron that would make us remove the context and give him his proper due. But I'm still stuck on this idea of what the hell do the Warriors do? If it is about stopping Anthony Davis, I mean, is there an Anthony Davis stopper? Who's the guy out there who you could even say gives him problems? Joel Embiid, actually, now that I think about it, Joel Embiid gives Anthony Davis problems.
Just get Joel Embiid then.
Draymond Green will get a... Draymond Green, baby.
That was a different Anthony Davis, though. To do well against that. Anthony Davis had problems against Draymond, but that was 5 years ago. That was a different player. He doesn't look like that guy anymore.
You need Draymond Green also to have a Zaza Pachulia next. You know what I mean? Like, he needs to tag team in Anthony Davis. He doesn't need 35 straight minutes of it. And, like, you know, I mentioned Aaron Baines. I don't think he's going to fall into their price range. I mentioned Dwight last time on the podcast. It's like a target to go after. I don't know. You know, Marc Gasol sounds like he's going to probably play in Spain next year. Serge Ibaka would be like a dream scenario, but he's probably going to go back to the Raptors at a good price. So
you want an interesting stat right here? Because now we're thinking about plausible Warriors, who their next acquisition might be. 4 games, regular season head-to-head, Joel Embiid versus Anthony Davis. Do you know what Anthony Davis shot from the field? 36%. I've seen it too. This isn't random. I mean, I've watched this particular match.
Why do you think that happens?
Because Embiid is so strong that he moves Anthony Davis away from his spots.
That's what Draymond used to do to him, right? I mean, Draymond, he just couldn't get
push
to the spot
him right off the spots. Yeah,
but Embiid is a lot bigger than Draymond.
That's the problem I think Draymond will have now, is Anthony Davis' jumper has gotten so good. I don't know how Draymond can contest that, but Embiid could. You know, he's got the length and the height to contest it.
Well, I know another guy who's got some decent length and height, and the Warriors could probably have on their roster next year. Just saying, you know,
who is that?
Number 2 Wiseman? Overall pick.
Yes, I mean, I think Wiseman.
I don't see him locking anybody up.
Yeah, I think Wiseman is the clear choice for them.
Yes, later.
No. I'm wary of Embiid, but the injuries and everything else, and everything going smaller, more versatile, but. Now I'm a little intrigued.
Do not get to hop back on the center bandwagon. You are Mr. Anti-Center.
It might be like, Embiid.
Center
might
is like your McCarthyism.
Season.
Here you go. Like, no.
It might.
Philly just hired Doc Rivers, and they didn't do that to trade Joel Embiid. They did that for him to coach Joel Embiid.
They're not trading. And if they're going to trade anybody, it's going to be Simmons. I'm saying that, right? If they're going to trade anybody, it's going to be Simmons. But, all right, I mean, Marcus threw Miles Turner out there. I wouldn't have said this 3 years ago because I didn't think he was that great 3 years ago. He's gotten a lot better, and he's still young. He could play that, you know, that shooting five. Better on defense recently, a little more athletic than he's been. If it's just essentially Wiggins for Turner, would you do that?
That creates a massive hole in the wing. It just does. And I understand people don't like Wiggins' contract, and I don't like Wiggins' contract.
I mean, you still have the number 2 pick. If frankly, they probably would have to give it the number 2, but It would be tough. It would
You'd
be
have
tough.
To what, know what the replacement for Wiggins is. You just have to know. You can't give him up and not know.
That's their argument for why, forget about the Wiggins contract, we need him so bad, is because there's a huge hole at the three. I mean, they need Andrew Wiggins to play 32 minutes next year and guard the best huge players in the league, which is another issue, by the way. Like, Andrew Wiggins will be guarding LeBron James and Kawhi Leonard, like, for 34 minutes in a play. I mean, Clay will switch on to him. We'll see. But, I mean, yeah, he's their wing defender.
You don't have Michael Mulder drawing that assignment a little bit here and there? You know, Kai Bowman going.
Michael Mulder needs to first make the roster, which he will try to do in training camp. And, yeah, I can see him playing 12 minutes tonight. You know,
Jordan Poole, the
and there's nobody in the draft who could start for the Warriors at three.
Right away,
I think Okoro is the one I would say as a shot at it, but he certainly couldn't score for you right away.
Like, you want to bring him in, and like, if he proves to be good enough, sure.
If
but like,
he's starting,
Andrew Wiggins
you're
at
got
20.
A problem.
Okoro's got a very strange offensive game to me in that he's got a lot of skill. He'll do this thing of he'll do a sidestep, step back 3-pointer that will airball is what he'll do. Sometimes, and really good around the rim. I do wonder if he could have some success just driving, you know, being a good driver when flanked by the Warriors shooting. I wouldn't be shocked if he actually provided a little more pop than maybe his reputation might suggest.
I like Okoro. Yeah, that's my guy of the wings. But what would scare me is, okay, he looks great, da da da, and then the first day at camp, you go, man, he kind of looks like Jacob Evans. You know, it's like there's a ceiling there that would be a little scary. I'm not saying that he is, but if you've got the number two pick, I don't think you want someone you go, I'm not sure if he's going to be that effective right away. I want a dynamic talent, and I'm not even sure Anthony Edwards is. I don't know that he is. LaMelo Ball is. Now, he might be a crazy dynamic talent, but he's a dynamic talent. Wiseman is a dynamic talent. Beyond that, I mean, is there another one that we could say, okay, this guy's, you're going to look at him and go, this guy can do things in the NBA? I don't know. Killian Hayes, I mean.
Okongwu is like kind of an interesting, like, if he becomes a Bam type, I'm not sure he will, but like he's, that would be like a versatile, interesting, like, you know, plug him into like a closing lineup if he's right away a very good, versatile defender.
Yeah, I kind of want to see how, what his real size is. Like, I kind of want, like, is he going to look like, you know, 6'7" guy on the floor? Is he going to look like a 6'9" guy? I don't know. Like, there's some guys that look like centers in the, you know, in college, and they show up in the NBA and they look like small forwards. So let's get that combine going. When's that combine, Slater? When's that coming up?
It's kind of like going on now. It's like all virtual. Like, that was part of the, when LaMelo Ball was like talking in a Detroit gym on Zoom call with like 50 of reporters, that was technically his interview with media at the combine. So
let's get some numbers coming out of that. I want to see some sizes.
I want some wingspan.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Got your happy Priceline.
Steve Kerr's been trying to like pump this comparison because I think he's trying to pump Eric Paschal's brain up, but about it. But like, Eric Paschal could become like a PJ Tucker like defender because he's got the strength and like kind of the girth down low and the physicality with a little bit of burst athleticism. That would be their dream scenario. Like, Paschal turns into a plus level defender. He wasn't really a good defender last year. You could see him turning into a good defender.
Are they ever going to solve that particular weird issue of him or Draymond? It doesn't really, it's oil and water. Is that something, how do they address that?
I mean, is he good enough to make it a choice yet? He's coming off the bench.
Yeah, they're both on the team and you figure
they're
out.
They're carrying two catchers, basically, is what they're doing.
All teams carry two catchers.
Exactly. I'm saying that's what they're doing.
I think that's probably correct, but I think they could play it out and you can play, you know, either one of them can play some five, I think, in some lineups. So that way you can sneak them both in the lineup that way. I think they got to see. It depends on if Draymond can hit a jump shot, really. It's what it, you know, like, it's so much different. Opens up if Draymond can hit the three. You know, maybe he never will, But if he's healthier, if his legs feel better, if his shoulder feels better, and he hits the three, you can do all sorts of different things with him. Right now, we're looking at Draymond, who cannot shoot the three. Then the lineups are limited in major ways with that one.
Does Pascal fix that?
No, I mean, you can play him in different ways with Pascal if he can shoot the three, because we're not sure if Pascal can shoot the three. That's the problem. Like, one of them's got to shoot the one of them's got to be able to shoot the three for them to both be on the floor together. Preferably both of them. But if neither one of them, and if one of them's a 28 and one of them's a 31% shooter from three, you are not playing them together. You just cannot do it.
It doesn't matter anyway, because Jordan Poole will make all the threes. Jordan Poole will make all of the threes. I'm calling that.
They're pumping his growth. They are. They're saying this is the hardest worker of the offseason in their building. It's the guy who's been there every single day, who has growing from a physical standpoint, which he needed. You guys remember seeing him last year. It was like, this is a kid. And does seem like he has a body that could physically grow. Apparently he is. I have not seen him in person. I saw him on one Zoom call. But I don't know. I mean, I don't necessarily know if I believe Jordan Poole ever will become something, but I guess the point they're making is if it's in there, he's trying to get it out. You know, like, he's trying.
The guy who I want to see, like, I need to see it with my own eyes, because they're hyping him too, is Kevon Looney. It's like, yeah, Kevon Looney in great shape. That's a Kevon Looney with some cuts on him and some muscles. Yeah, I need to see that. I'm not too sure.
He's not in good shape. He's not in good conditioning shape. The thing that has changed is he's not, every time he takes a step, there's not a massive pain in his side. You know, he got core surgery, which is a, you know, rare thing. You guys remember seeing him run last year? It looked very painful to, like, run up the court. And he has even admitted, like, I was scared to move. I was scared to go over and contest the shot because it was hurting me to do that. And that is what apparently has changed. It doesn't hurt him to move anymore. He's not cut and in shape. Like, he needs to get that now, but at least he's not, I guess, in constant pain.
I'm going to fall prey to stereotype here about my predilections for players and say that Looney, with a lot of recovery time, could be a really good thing. They need competent players. They need guys who are just, they can do a good job and not make mistakes and just be positive. If Kevon Looney is not feeling pain in his side every time he moves, he's that guy for them. And I think that could be a very undervalued boost, just because they have so much time for these guys to get fully recovered and healed and healthy off of the injuries they've suffered. So I would look out for that. I would not discount the possibility of a Kevon Looney renaissance.
What is he, 26, 27? He's still whatever.
No, he's even younger.
24,
yeah,
right?
25. Yeah, it's unbelievable. Yeah. I think of him as a 35-year-old player, and I think that's kind of how they have to treat him, as the injuries he's gone through. He has never been very dynamic. And if you just think of him as a guy that, like, can you get two seasons out of him, and he's smart, and he's, you know, he can play important minutes and not screw up, then that's good, you know, in a way that Damian Jones never could be. That's fine, but I don't think you can go, man, that guy for the next 5 years, we're gonna count on him. Like, you can't do that with him.
I am way more of a Looney fan than Tim is. I look at it as...
You've always been. I
agree with the last sentence you said, but look, he played 80 games in 2018-2019.
Really 180 and then into the playoffs. Like, he had that honestly kind of might have killed his body, but yeah.
Yeah, and then he suffered from, that happens, and then they had the very quick turnaround, which I think he had lingering issues from that after he got injured on that Kawhi play. I am far more of a Kevon Looney optimist. I know it was ugly last year. I know it was bad, but he knows how to play basketball. You know, a lot of guys don't. He knows how to play basketball.
And we can't underestimate these other guys, like, especially considering how new this roster is. Can you imagine how much Steph and Clay and Draymond would like seeing Looney on the court, like a guy who knows how they play? Like, that will matter a lot too.
And I'm going to go contrary to a lot of things that I write, is, you know, about how the little things matter, defensive positioning, smart. But it also is a lot more important when you're playing with Kevin Durant next to you, as opposed to when you don't have, or Steph in his prime, when Clay not coming off of ACL. Like, they're going to need guys who can create a little bit. They are going to need a little bit of one-on-one basketball. And if they put a bunch of guys out there who all do the little things and don't do the initiate the offense thing, it's going to be problematic.
I've been saying they needed that since Rodney Stuckey was in the league.
Yeah, he was the answer. Jeez. Jamal Crawford, that's what they need.
You can never have enough creators.
When you don't have them, the other guys are less valuable.
Literally the finals. That's the finals right there. That's what we watch in the finals.
The one word that concerns me with Kevon Looney that none of us have said yet is neuropathy. You know, like they admitted that last year. They revealed that he deals with this neuropathic condition that, you know, clearly affects his body. And so to me, like Ethan's correct, like an optimized Kevon Looney is a 25 minute per night player. The problem is I think the Warriors should in no way build their roster assuming Kevon Looney will be a 25 minute per night player. If he is, that's a bonus. That's just a bonus.
It's probably going to be for 20 games at a time, really, right? I mean, you can't go, oh, we're going to have, if it's a 65 game season next year, it isn't going to be Kevon Looney playing 65 games. It just isn't. I mean, you can't plot that out. Not to be unfair to him, you just can't. And so everything kind of hinges around that. And again, I'm linking him as like a 35-year-old player, like a really good 35-year-old, you know, veteran, gutsy, Udonis Haslam 35-year-old player. And I think if you just set the standard on that, I think then it can be, you can realistically figure out what his roster spot is. If you go higher than that, I think you might be looking for some trouble.
Well, I mean, he's making $4 million, $5 million. If I'm Looney, I'm like, don't expect the world from me for $5 million. Yeah, you get 20 minutes.
By the way, there's a reason why he had to keep coming back to the Warriors with these very middle-sized contracts when it's like, hey, Kevon Looney is a free agent. He's going to go make a ton of money now. And guess what? There were no offers for him. He's undervalued. I agree with that. For when he's good, he's good. But there's a reason why there wasn't a ton of demand or any for Kevon Looney when he was healthy.
So in honor of Kevon Looney, the great perimeter defender for a big man who made incredible strides over his career and was clutch in the playoffs defending James Harden on the perimeter, let's close this out. That was pretty bad, but hey.
Close out. I expected something. Close out.
Something stopped. Was coming. Was close out after Looney. The close out. What?
No, close out. Okay. Looney, good. That was out. Like we'll close out the pod.
That was anyway. Like an intro's lights out.
Yeah. Anyway, this podcast.
We didn't talk over. Any finals, by the way. We talked
it's
no.
Probably
finals,
good because this is coming out after Game which 4, great, so yeah. It's either gonna be 3-1 or 2-2, and we do not know.
See you next week.
2 weeks. 2 weeks. We could really start talking draft.
I did book my podcast guest during the show. I want to point that out that we finalized that. So
by the way,
everyone can be happy.
I think we will be almost exactly a month out from the draft next time. You know, two
oh,
weeks
we go.
Now, so.
Let's do some serious draft study.
There
draft
we go. Study.
See
Ethan,
you
lock
weeks.
In.
Oh man, draft time.
I think
maybe.
Ethan started his draft series 7 years ago for this draft. Is what yeah. It feels like. My
yeah,
God.
I know too much now. It's screwing up my analysis. And I've taken like every position. I've taken already like 8 contradictory positions at this point. So I've covered all the bases.
You and Coward. It's good enough for me. It's a show.
I've been trying to end the show for like 5 times now. Are we actually in there right now? Is this
yes.
It? Are we done? All right, we out.
The NBA draft. It's like